Welcome to AMAT's Transportation Talk, a podcast that focuses on transportation happenings in the greater Akron area. Thank you for listening to AMAT's Transportation Talk. I'm Curtis Baker. In this episode, I circle back with Alex Pesta of City Architecture, whom I talked to before the COVID-19 pandemic. We discuss the events of the last 6 months and how it has and will continue to impact the planning process. Thanks for listening. All right. Well, welcome to Transportation Talk. This is September 30th, 2020, and we're coming at you for the first time since March. I'm Curtis Baker, the director of AMATS. And again, to bookend the pandemic, with me is Alex Pesta, who was on our last episode of Transportation Talk in March, right before the pandemic took hold.
So it's Alex, our fault.
Yeah.
The pandemic's our fault.
Yeah. But Alex works for a principal for City Architecture, a consulting firm that does planning and architecture and out of Cleveland, but they cover the whole Northeast Ohio region. And Alex, thanks for joining us again. It seems like it's been quite a long time.
It has. It's good to see you. I know that our audience can't see us, so that's a benefit to them. But it's good to see you, Curtis. It's good to kind of continue our conversation and pick up where we left off.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I just think obviously there's so many issues that we've been wanting to unwrap when it comes to the pandemic. And I thought today what we would want to do is touch on some of those planning issues. Sort of start with, you know, March and April, when there truly was a shutdown of most services that were not essential. And then kind of going into where we are now, which some people would argue is almost back to normal in some respects. Obviously not everything is. And so really what this conversation I'd hope to be about is sort of, what do we think sticks? You know, what's maybe changed permanently, and what maybe is just sort of an anomaly that comes with every 100-year pandemic. But, you know, since the last time we've been together, I thought we'd just start with a simple question. What's changed for you? You know, what do you think is different now than it was when we last talked in March?
That's a great question. I mean, everything. I mean, that's my immediate reaction. You know, I know that you know this, but like, Tara and I have three relatively young kids at home. So we're kind of figuring out what the new work-life balance is. So that's been a big change. And I'm sure that a lot of folks that are kind of navigating that as well. What's changed for us from a business standpoint and kind of from a practical standpoint is the last 6 months has really underscored the importance of effective communication and trying to figure out how to use technology to remain connected and still have a collaborative office, right? Like our work is, you know, I don't know if you've been in our office yet, but like we have one big studio space and there's projects that are pinned up on the wall and there's conversations that happen and that's how stuff evolves. None of that is happening right now. We're trying to figure out how to do that, or we have figured out how to do that on a digital kind of virtual platform, but it's not the same. I think what's changed for us is really that kind of organic nature of having a conversation with someone or seeing something pinned up and or hearing it, overhearing a conversation and getting involved. It just doesn't happen without a schedule. And I'm sure that your calendar looks like mine. Like it's scheduled to every half hour where it's Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting in order to kind of keep things moving and keep that level of coordination going. But it is very difficult. And I think that's primarily what's changed for us is just the level of energy that you have to maintain to keep communicative.
Yeah, and it's really, to me, it's fascinating. What I've realized is how much I think we all kind of miss people and miss the contact with people. I mean, I think even, you know, for people that are somewhat introverted, you know, the office space is a time when you do have to kind of work with others and be with other people. And while, you know, I think there's a ton of benefits of remote work, I think that's one of the things that, you know, even when you are in the office and you run into two people, you end up talking for 45 minutes because you hadn't seen them in a few weeks or even a month. So right. It is different. That's for sure. speaking about like planning issues or transportation, I was curious from your perspective, did you have any, what were your most glaring observations of, let's just say the April shutdown, or as you know, when Ohio shut down, and really it felt like everybody was just sort of a stay in place, shelter in place type environment.
Right.
What were you thinking about in terms of planning and you know, everything that we saw kind of happening around us?
I wouldn't say so much in April, but I think maybe towards the end of April and May when the weather started to break a little bit, it was glaringly obvious of how important public space was. I think that people were pent up. I think that people wanted to be outside. They needed a change of scenery. They needed to exercise during the day. They needed to maybe get away from their kids that were doing virtual learning. But I think that like it was reassuring with the work that you and I do and kind of what we champion to see so many people using spaces that just it emphasized and demonstrated the need for accessible and inclusive public spaces everywhere. I mean, and I'm talking like in the street, on the street, in the park, in, you know, like we weren't allowed to be on playgrounds, but it was amazing. Like you could find people like just kind of carving out their own space. I thought that was something there was no subtlety in that. Like there was just a lot of people out. A lot of people riding bikes. Like that was one of the things that we did as a family, like for lunch. Like I was working at home, Tara was working at home, kids were all at home. And so we'd eat lunch together and then we'd go for a bike ride. Like that was like our little recess together. Mm-hmm. It was actually pretty awesome. And there was a lot of people that were out kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you say that because it ended up being, especially in April, it was like, if it was above 40 degrees and not raining, we would take an evening bike ride with our kids around the neighborhood. And we would be bike riding and, you know, the kids were trying to figure out the best way to cover their ears with their bike helmets, you know, and things like that, because it was just, you're right. Everyone, you know, you tried to just make a break for the outdoors. And, you know, I think it really, I agree. I think it really emphasized that. It was also fascinating to me, like from an air quality perspective and from, you know, just the difference of not having so much automobile activity. Not saying that I went out and like took a big breath of air and was like, ah, it's cleaner today. But there was something where you really did. And when you looked at some of the national data, you really saw it. I mean, you saw the levels of ozone and, you know, all those things, PM, all those things really go down. And, you know, it made you wonder and again, this is not from an economic championship or champion perspective, but just in general, like, wow, like, you know, it makes sense. And you really see how much the automobile just impacts kind of the environment around it. And that was what was really striking to me, was just how much driving just, you know, fell off a cliff and how much our counts. And from a planning perspective also kind of created some really unique challenges, because we were going into a counting season, you know, where we start counting traffic, and made the realization very quickly that like, okay, we can't count, you know, it doesn't make sense to count. I mean, we could to get some anecdotal.
I wish you could have. Yeah. Like, I wish you could have done all the counts and that would have established your traffic volumes. So we could be road diets all day.
And those traffic volumes would have been, I mean, really it was pretty precipitous, the cliff. And so, you know, we had to kind of rethink of our programs and things that we had going on in the summer. You know, our board meetings have become completely remote right now. And there's some public involvement type challenges that we are working our best to, you know, figure out the best way to communicate with the public, you know, using tools like Facebook, which like I'm not a big Facebook user. So I had to kind of teach myself some of that stuff and, you know, how to stream it live and all those things. And, you know, like at the end of the day, I think we are learning a lot about another tool in the toolbox when it comes to planning and things like engagement, but it's also not a replacement. It's not a one for one replacement.
It isn't, but I think I know that we're going to talk about like kind of what we think is going to carry forward. I think that online engagement platform is going to be one of those things that carries forward. I think that you know, we were in the midst of a transportation plan, and I was shocked that the project didn't go on hold, kind of as a result of everything else that was changing. But we, the client, and you know, kind of made the decision to keep moving forward with it. So that forced us to get very creative about how we engaged with folks. And it was honestly like, it was some of the best engagement that we've ever had, because it was different, and because everybody, it was different for everybody. Like we had a series that were called like kitchen table discussions, and these things popped off at like 6 o'clock on a Friday night. And we had 40, 50 people log in and participate, because it was a time where we could get people. And it was, you know, we had two artists that were leading the engagement process, one of which is a professional ballet dancer. And so she would kick off every meeting with like a playlist and like a movement exercise, and like it became very social.
Right.
And it was phenomenal to see technology kind of fill in that gap. So I agree with you that I don't think that there's ever going to be kind of that one-for-one replacement, but I certainly see, you know, aspects of kind of this online engagement piece carrying forward.
Yeah. No, and I think my concern, you know, the one thing that we are concerned about with the online engagement, I think, is I just don't think you can use that for every, especially like in a time when, say, the libraries are shut down. So,
right.
You know, there's some people that you're not going to get to, because you can't have the face-to-face meeting, that, you know, they don't necessarily have access to a computer or the internet and things like that. But I agree. I mean, we saw a ton of engagement from our CIC webinars, and, you know, just people viewing them, finding out what we were talking about. We did a little presentation with ODOT, and that went really, really well. So, you know, I think it's stuff like that is really beneficial, and I think definitely has a lot of play in the future. I agree with that. I think, but I think it's important to see it as one tool versus, say, the be all end all of engagement.
That, like, can I, like, have you in the work that you've done kind of on that kind of media, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or other places that you've looked at, or other organizations that you've seen do that work, have you seen like innovation? Like, have you seen, I'll be honest with you, I have not, right? Like, and so that, I think that that's been part of the frustration, is that we're trying to do things differently, but maybe with some of the same tools.
Right.
And it's been tough.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything that like you sat back and you're like, oh my God, like that's awesome. We're going to do that from this moment on.
No. Yeah. I mean, honestly, what you were just talking about sounded a hell of a lot more interesting than things that I've seen.
But that had everything to do with the people leading it.
Right.
We were using technology as the convener, but like the folks that were doing that work, which were Lexi Lattimore and Daniel Contar Gray from up this way in Cleveland, like that process wouldn't have been nearly as successful without their personalities leading.
Right.
Like we did launch, and this isn't new to the industry, but it was something that kind of gained, it sucked people into the presentation side of things, is a piece of software called Poll Everywhere. I think that's what it's called. And it's a plugin for PowerPoint. I know how much we love PowerPoint.
Yeah.
But it's an interactive kind of polling process that people can use their cell phones. So like you get to that slide, and then there's like a text, yes or no to this number. And then it reports out in real time. So like you can see like the pie chart move around, or the bar graph, like, and that, again, I don't think that that's necessarily innovative, but it was new, and it was a way to get people's attention and get them engaged in the middle of a presentation. Mm-hmm. But we've actually had conversations here. Unfortunately, we really didn't advance them too far of like, do we start to look at creating a digital platform that could be more effective than what's out on the market right now. And we talked with some coders, and it was above my head. And then we had to focus on some other things here, but.
Yeah. Online engagement is sort of interesting, you know, and I think the fear is that, you know, kind of like the public comments on cleveland.com or the public, you know, like all of a sudden they devolve into something that's not really germane or appropriate for your planning conversation that you're trying to, you know, have.
Did
or,
you get Zoom bombed? Were you ever on a call that? Did you ever get Zoom bombed? Or
no,
like,
no, we did not get. We've been very cautious, but I've always felt like we're up for it just because we do share our link. You know, when we have our board meetings of 45
right.
members.
So, right, so I'm going to make a note.
Yeah. Please don't. but I guess, you know, taking that, so now we're in August, right? I mean, we've still got a lot of remote work going, or August. We're in September, almost October. So
I thought you were like creating a chronology. Okay. Yes,
Yeah. But we're, you know, we're basically, I think through, and I, by first wave, I don't mean the pandemic first wave necessarily, but sort of, you know, the shutdown and then kind of creep ramping back up where most things are open. Do you ever think we'll get back to what life felt like in January 2020? And that's couched in from a planning perspective. Do you think, you know, do you think things will change or will maybe not ever go back?
Right, so this is my shameless plug for city architecture. Okay. Like, so my answer to that from our perspective is no. My answer to that is yes, we're going to get back to normal, because normal for us was always focused on people, places, right? Like, it was about creating those spaces and then that engagement. I think it's going to evolve. I think the result of that is going to maybe be changed, but I think that the process is going to be, we're going to stay true to that. You know, I'm sure that you've read and participated in webinars and other things of like, what does the future of a public plaza or a public park or a playground look like? I think the answer to that is nobody really knows.
Right.
So I do think that it's going to get back to kind of where we were. It'll be interesting from my perspective. It'll be interesting to see how community engagement kind of ramps back up or kind of returns back to normal, on whether, you know, we all say that we miss that kind of face-to-face interaction, but like, do we really, like, do we, like, you know what I mean? And like, I'm being a little facetious, but like, do we really miss it? Like, or is like, there going to be some, you know, not necessarily from the planning world, but like, is there going to be some hesitation to have a process like we did in, you know, February?
Right. Right. And how long will it take for some of that to come back? You know, like that comfort level. What about downtowns? You worried about your downtown?
Yeah. Yeah. I thank God I don't own commercial real estate.
Yeah. I have a friend that's in commercial real estate out of state, and I was texting him about it, and he was just saying it's kind of like, you know, the calm before the storm right now. Is that, you know, because they know they have a lot of clients that are just reassessing, you know, and I think at the end of the day, it's almost impossible not to come back with a, you know, pro forma sheet or something that just says, this is how much money you can be saving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, I guess if we're
downtowns,
worried.
Like downtowns in general, yes, I'm worried. You know, there's Akron's downtown, Cleveland's downtown, our regional downtowns, like they're all fragile. And like, this is a big disruption to some of the trajectory and momentum that each one of those places had. I think what's interesting, like Cleveland, there's been a surge of downtown living. So a lot of the former office buildings over the last 5 years,
right,
were converting to residential. And so there was already kind of a rebalance of kind of what I would consider like available square footage reallocated in a way from office to residential. So I think at some level, if that momentum can be maintained, downtown is gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Do
you think downtown revitalization now is more on the backs of, will, and in the future will be more on the backs of the people that choose to live there than the people that come to work there?
I haven't thought about that. It's a really, probably.
I've wondered that, you know, and I think about that even for a downtown like Akron, or like you said, Canton, Pittsburgh, you know, Youngstown, is, you know, at some point is a certain Class B office space just not going to be attractive? And so at that point, you know, do you start to see maybe even more conversions to residential if things pick up? But then at the same time, it just puts an emphasis on that residential provide, you know, so then you still want the downtown to be the place you know, where you work and play, you know, where you live and play. And, you know, but I think of those three buttresses, the strongest was always the work.
Right.
And there's a part of me that wonders, not so much that goes away, but does that, whereas say before it might've been 80%, over the course of the next 20 years, do we see that shrink to say 60%, you know, and have the residential take more, or the live portion take more. And I think that's, you know, because obviously what we do is long range planning. So I found myself thinking about this quite a bit. And it is, you know, the good news is from everything that we've heard, and I'm not as familiar with the Cleveland market, but I'm sure you could correct me if I'm wrong. It's like, these developments are still going forward and there are still people leasing, you know, apartments in our downtowns. And,
yeah.
You know, so my hope is that that helps balance the scale, so to speak. But it is interesting because, you know, we blame the highway system for, and rightfully so, for so much of the way that we've spread out and that we don't have these concentrated downtowns. Well, like, you wonder if in 50 years we're going to be saying the same thing about the internet and broadband, because, you know, as these technologies get stronger and better,
right,
you know, who says that, you know, we're not going to have major companies just divesting completely from a physical presence in certain places, you know, because just from the idea of if you can hire anyone in the country and, you know, you can work let's say I could be a city planner for Tulsa and live here in Ohio. Like, would, you know, is that something that's in the, not the near future, I don't believe that, but are there, you know, but where are we going with that? And I just think that that's a really, you know, I think things like this do tend to create some paradigm shifts and how we see things. And that's the one that I think I'm the most afraid of from like the health of a city's perspective is the, you know, is there this idea, hey, we can, you know, we can really spread out now because, you know, Bill doesn't even need to come into the office except for once a month.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And every business obviously is different. I mean, and obviously in Ohio and in Northeast Ohio, our manufacturing base that still exists, distribution and warehousing, like all those things require human capital being present. But you wonder about some of those more white collar institutions, you know, what we could expect there. I think it's an interesting conversation.
It is. And I think what's going to happen in the immediate or near term is that you're going to see a lot of vacancy. I think just because people are trying to figure out how to make their operational budgets work, right? Like if you're an attorney's office and you have three floors in Key Tower in downtown Cleveland, like you probably don't need three floors. And so when it comes time to renegotiate that lease, you're going to renegotiate because it's part of your bottom line. And so I think that there's probably going to be a very quick market correction, and then it's going to be a slow kind of rebalance. I'm glad that you said it that way. And I think that's a really good way to put it. I think there's going to be a rebalancing of what happens with the available kind of floor area that are in our downtowns. I haven't thought about it in the way that you did, Curtis, but like, it's downtowns are going to be different. Like they just are. And I don't think that it's going to be a huge change, but it is going to be a change. And I think that there's going to be kind of a dip, and then it's going to start to come back.
And I certainly don't mean to be doomsday about it or anything. It's just one of those things that I've started to think about is, you know, if our larger employees continue to say, hey, you know, I mean, I think about like Progressive's campus, you know, I mean, like it's not even just office parks, right? I mean, it's not even just downtowns, it's also office parks, you know? Right. I mean, you know, if Progressive decides to follow Google's lead and take, you know, keep all their people at home, why are they, you know, why do they have so much square footage tied up, you know, along I-271?
In the scenario that you said, right, Progressive, in Mayfield, like it's along 271. So what happens to the 271 corridor, right? Like if people are traveling less, like, and you're a transportation planner, like you get to weigh in on what gets funded or how some of those funds get allocated. Like, what do you see the future of, you know, I think we have a good handle on maybe arterials and kind of neighborhood streets.
Yeah.
But what happens to the highway system?
One of the things that we've started looking at a lot is growth rates and projected growth rates for traffic. And, you know, what we're finding is when we're digging up our counts from 20 years ago or 25 years ago, traffic was higher in the 90s than it is now. Mm-hmm. So when we're putting together growth rates for, you know, for transportation projects, we can't have our consultants use 1% per year over 20 years and then design to, you know, a 20 some percent growth in traffic that we really don't have any evidence exists. And I think right now, you know, with the pandemic, I mean, what I will say, and we can get into this more, is that like traffic is pretty much back to normal on the freeways, other than what we're seeing is the AM peak. And I think part of that's school related.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I would say maybe they're down, I don't know, 5,000 to 7,000 cars a day from where, in certain areas, you know, maybe between 5% and 10% down. But I do think that that's interesting. I think when, especially for us as long range planners, when we look out and we're putting out a plan for 2045, it's hard for me to think that we'll have many true capacity, you know, lane adding jobs on there, unless the problem is now, right? Unless the problem is now and we know about it and it exists even today. But, you know, frankly, our membership and our communities do not seem to have that interest. I think what we're kind of pushing more and more is sort of when you do have congestion, being willing to live with that congestion, you know, versus a really expensive project. And also then focusing, you know, because I think what we've talked about before is like our highway system's 60 years old. You know, most of our roadways are on brick, in the downtown areas on brick bases, and you know, these mm-hmm. things definitely age over time. So I think that is something that we're thinking about long range is, you know, what are you projecting traffic to be in the future? Because we're, you know, and we can, obviously anybody can make up numbers, but I think we almost want to try to create a little bit of guidance for, hey, this is really what we've seen, you know, in terms of traffic growth in different locations. If we want to stick on the traffic theme though, so let's talk about this. So fatalities in Ohio, most fatalities on the roadways since 2007, this was as of July, fatalities are up. The fatalities, including bike and pedestrians, are up. And this is even with our traffic volumes being down 50% in this time. Yeah. When we were talking about the observations that we had during the pandemic, one of them was definitely speeding. And, you know, our data actually, you know, bore that out a little bit. When you look at some of ODOT's ATR counters that actually include kind of a median speed or 85th percentile speed. During the pandemic, you know, traffic was cut in half. The speed went up like 2 miles per hour at the median. You know, people were, and this was through like construction zones and things like this. Mm-hmm. To me, seeing this stuff, I mean, one, if any crash is just, you know, where there's a fatality is just heartbreaking. And we had one recently here that, you know, was really pretty awful, and you hate for those things to happen. But I think one of the things that we saw that I think kind of bears out sort of planning theory is that, you know, the wider you make a road, the people will travel as fast as they can if the facility allows it. And so I think when you had so many fewer cars, all of a sudden roadways that, you know, in a way the other vehicles help control, well, not in a way, they do. They help control your speed because you can only go as fast as the car you're in front of.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, we saw some of those things basically become wide open roadways. And, you know, the other stat was what the number of tickets or, you know, the percentage of people who have been pulled over going faster than 100 miles an hour is like higher than it's ever been through the first half of the year. And, you know, in a way, I think it almost bodes the question, like, why are we even designing facilities that you can go 100 miles an hour on. Like how fast can, I mean, the highest I think was 147 miles.
Yeah, that's hour. You share that in like, down in kind of the Cincinnati area, which is, that's insane. It's all behavior, right? Like we I'm not a traffic engineer. But what I've learned through our work is that people are a product of their environment. And if you want to deter a certain behavior, especially when somebody is in a car, when they're in a motorized vehicle, like you have to put something in the way. Signs don't work. Paint on the street doesn't work. Like if you want to prohibit a left-hand turn out of a place, like you put a median in the middle of the road so they can't go left, right? Like, and so to your point of when some of those other kind of physical influencers on driver behavior are gone, people are going to take advantage of what effectively has become wider roads.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you shared some of those statistics with me kind of before we got together and we were talking, and my immediate reaction was higher speeds because there's less activity, less vehicular activity. So just less awareness, right? Like you're just kind of your cone of vision is shrinking because there's just less things to maybe distract. And then I read, I was like, well, that's on to something. And then I read like that the pedestrian and the kind of the folks on bikes, like that there's a high level of fatality that's kind of associated with that. When I was just like that, I couldn't, it was wrestling in my head of like, if that was a competing kind of theory with like less activity and higher speed, or if it was, you know, to me, that's more activity. So people should be slowing down, but, right. But maybe people just don't see people on bikes and on foot. Like it takes a 2,000 pound or 3,000 or 8,000 pound metal box to get somebody's attention.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is and a question that I had, I didn't know if you had any kind of backup information, was you shared that this July was Ohio's deadliest traffic month since 2007 with over 150 fatalities. Do you have any indication of like what types of roads those are happening on? Is that highway? Is that arterial? Like, I think that like kind of an under, is it blanket? Is it everywhere? Or is it a road type that we could point to it and go like, aha, like that's the one that when you eliminate other vehicular traffic, people fly on.
Yeah. And honestly, I haven't dug deep into the latest stuff that's come out. I think our understanding is, well, obviously, I think usually the fatalities are happening at high speeds. Typically, you know, a bulk of them are going to happen on the interstate. Ones that happen off interstate a lot of times tend to be pretty unique in terms of, you know, just, I mean, you hate to say, I mean, freak, but, you know, at least when we're talking about a car fatality. Mm-hmm. The bike and pedestrian stuff, that's obviously, we know, is happening in urban corridors. We know, you know, you don't have to be going 60 to hit someone and kill them. You know, you only have to be going 30. And you could, you know, right, seriously injure someone or kill them when they're on a bicycle or when they're walking. You know, and to me, you know, I think that's the other thing we've been looking at is like, I think there's different stories to be told, almost like what you're going at, I think a little bit, is between our highways and our urban cores and our urban streets, is that, you know, on the one side, on the highways, you have less activity. But now all that activity is more concentrated at around your home, you know, right. And so you have more people walking, and it almost becomes the worst of all worlds, right? You have traffic, you have roads without a lot of traffic on them, but with a lot of people or more people than usual. So cars are going faster and they're not taking into account, you know, basically bicycles and pedestrians. Or bicyclists and pedestrians. And I really do think that that's what has contributed to some of it. But, you know, we've been looking a lot at the bike and ped fatalities even before the pandemic. And I mean, it's fair to say a lot of them are happening, you know, pretty much, you know, in our urban cores, on our urban streets. And it's, something that it's tough to fix, because at least when you're looking at fatalities, because fatalities do tend to happen almost like a shot. You know, if you imagine taking a shotgun and shooting it at the map, it's really scattered. So it's not like if you put a mid block crossing here or you try to narrow this road, it's going to prevent, you know, it's sort of a moving target. I mean, in general, I think it, you know, the slow, at the end of the day, when I argue with our traffic engineers about this, I always say that when you're the one that's driving the couple thousand pound killing machine, like, you have a little bit more responsibility than when you're walking, you know, you're not gonna, if you have an error as a, as a pedestrian, like, you're the one that dies. Right. Not usually the person driving the car. So I do think it's kind of an interesting mix. I think we saw more activity branch out and get outside. And, I think that's where one of those things I'm really interested to see is what happens next spring and next summer, you know, when, again, I have a feeling that people, not that there will be a lockdown, but most people will probably do some level of self-imposed, you know, as it gets colder. There's going to be some level of self-imposed isolation to, mm-hmm. To maintain safety. And when that occurs and we get to next spring, will we have the same thing? I mean, it wouldn't, we did a story a while ago on like bike sales and how much people were buying bikes. And you literally, I think it was Century Cycles, like, was calling them about something. And they said they literally would put their own bikes on the display racks just so it would look like there were bikes that were, like it was a bike shop, they needed bikes. But all that stuff, trying to find racks, campers become a very hot commodity.
It was interesting to see like where kind of those market shifts happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and to the point where, so obviously the cheap bikes went first, then the middle of the road, then the most expensive, and then people who don't even want e-bikes are buying e-bikes, and falling in love with them even, but because they wanted a bike. And so, my hope is that what it does is it energizes people to, kind of like you were almost saying, like, experience our urban places, our parks, our beautiful natural recreation areas, and want to continue to experience them. Not that this is a one-shot deal, that everyone returns to sort of like, oh, I need to, drive here and drive there. Maybe we can see some of that substitution in mode. And, I'm always kind of more of an incrementalist at heart, I think. And so for me personally, I think small steps like this might be some silver linings in the pandemic of, maybe we are able to, get better at, getting outside, getting active, but then also, exploring our region in a different way and realizing what's possible.
Yeah. I think that would be great. I mean, I hope, and this might be pushing it too far from an aspirational state, I hope that policies and kind of decision-making kind of mechanisms that are in place on who and how gets funded for transportation projects. Like, I hope that gets revisited, and I hope that some of that gets repositioned as a result of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it will be interesting, but I think it also is going to take time, because I really am not sure where, I remember when we went home to remote work and when the shutdown started, and I remember thinking like, well, we're going to shut down for 3 weeks and hopefully this thing is going to die and then we're all going to come back and it'll be just like normal.
Yep.
Never in my wildest dreams, and you could say maybe I was just really ignorant, and I was, but at the end of the day, we're going to be living in some type of different condition for at least, I'd have to assume, through March of next year, before, and even then, possibly not until November of next year, depending on all of this stuff. And so, you start, like, in our mind, and that even long circle back to me talking about when we suspended our traffic counting program, you know, we've been having discussions. Well, do we start putting the counters out again? And I've always kind of thought, well, like, yeah, but, you know, I feel like any count we do this year needs to almost be with an asterisk because, you know, schools aren't in session and this and that, you know, and then you start to wonder, yeah, but if this goes into next year, then, you know, you're almost talking about, you know, what do they say? Like for personal habits, it takes 3 weeks. Like, well, what does it take for a culture to change right. their habits and lose weight?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that there's anybody that has answers.
No.
Right. I think that it's like, it's this continuing, what this is kind of illuminated is that we have to be adaptable and unfortunately, a lot of the ways that decisions are made relative to funding, whether relative to policy, like it's not adaptable, right? Like that's why it is a policy. Like that's kind of why it's there, is to be law or it's to be a process. But I think that it's time to revisit and rethink, you know, how some of those decisions are going to be made. Because I'm a big believer that like, that the quality of space is the most important thing. And so kind of going all the way back full circle, we said that, you know, in April, May, when the weather started to break, we saw a lot of people outside. Like, gosh, I would really like to be part of the conversation on how do we make those corridors or those places the best that they can be. And if that means that we are focused more on those spaces that we saw have a higher kind of frequency or higher use, like higher use or more use, then I like, let's see the policies follow that. And let's see the policies kind of lead how future decisions can be made. Because I do think that the work from home, a lot of it is going to stick. I don't think it's going to be in the current situation that we are, but I think that there are going to be a lot of industry shifts. And so creating the spaces, or at least creating the policies to promote that, I think are going to be important. It's going to be very interesting to see who and how can adapt to not only the lifestyle, I think that we don't have a choice per se, but with the policy and the way that funding is allocated within our region.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and if this goes long enough, I mean, and again, this is just me kind of speculating, but I can almost see also like a boomerang effect, right? Like where people are gone for so long from the office or from things that all of a sudden, you know, businesses start saying, hey, we just built this cool hip new space. And it probably looks a lot different than it did before, but you know, people are going to be like, you know what? I just don't want to sit at my kitchen table anymore. You know, and yeah. almost goes back to your point about public spaces too, is that, and then if people do stay home, then I think the communities that they live in, you know, it is incumbent on planners to make them, you know, make those connections to parks, connections to things like the library, to the schools. All those things become more and more critically important. And, you know, obviously Northeast Ohio, when it comes to dealing with sprawl issues and things, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, and I think that's really, you know, it's almost like when we talk about autonomous cars in the same way that, like, you know, the impacts that they could have on cities could be, you know, enormous, but you almost don't really know unless it actually happens. And
right.
And that's where I almost feel now. So we've seen where the pandemic, we've seen this mass mobilization to get people out, right? What is it going to look like when we, you know, remobilize to, you know, and unfortunately, there's never going to be, no one's going to shoot a gun, or there's no finish line. You know, it's not like, okay, now it's done. We're done. So everybody get back to normal. Right. It's going to be very slow and subtle, you know, which makes me start to think more and more, you know, how you're right. Like we have to be cognizant of some of these trends and that they, you know, they are here to stay. We can't just keep assuming that there's going to be 50% traffic growth, even though there's never been 50% traffic growth in the last 20 years, but we can't keep assuming that
right.
In this current environment, especially when we have aging infrastructure. So much of our money can be spent on you know, true preserving the system. And I think, you know, between that and then bike connections, sidewalk connections, and, you know, even, dare I say, density, although it seems like that's the, you know, there's this, I don't know, ongoing thought of like somehow you're more dangerous to get COVID if you live in an apartment building or something like that. I'm not so sure that that's the case. But, you know, you hope things like that don't, or are part of the solution instead of kind of, you know, just trying to get back to business as usual.
Right.
Well, with that, Alex, you have any parting thoughts, any final words? You know, just, I think it was fitting, you know, I definitely appreciate you coming on with us. It was easy. One, we kind of have done this before, and for us to get back into the swing of things, especially using Zoom instead of our usual studio, I think it's been a fun conversation.
No, I appreciate it. No, like, I look up to you and AMAT because like you guys are pushing those policies. Like you guys are, you have a voice that's there. And so I just appreciate kind of the different perspective, right? Like I always feel when we do a planning process, especially around transportation planning, we're usually one of the dissenters in the room. Like we're pushing for less traffic or less vehicular traffic, or we're pushing for less space for cars. And you guys have been there kind of alongside. And so I'm just looking forward to kind of the next steps with kind of how this evolves.
Yeah,
it's gonna wait 6 months until we do this again, because God only knows what we've just caused by having this one based on what we did in March.
Well, you know, what really was the impetus is we finally got our podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. And once we saw them on there, we're like, oh, it's been 6 months. We got to get back on this. And so I appreciate you coming on. And again, I think it's just sort of interesting. You know, we were talking about the planning process in March, and again, talking about planning 6 months later. And it really is a very, there's just a different set of challenges than there were months ago. And it's pretty drastic change. So, with that, thank you everyone for listening to the podcast. Thank you, Alex, for joining us. And hopefully we'll be back a lot sooner than 6 months from now. And everyone, I hope stay safe, and we will report back soon.
Thank you for listening to AMAT's Transportation Talk. Keep an eye out for additional content by following us on Twitter at AMATSPlanning and AMATSPlanning.org.